Vicatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Vicatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are tackling a really significant piece of history, William L. Shirer's The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. It's quite the volume, a massive book.
It absolutely is.
But the insights inside, well, they feel incredibly relevant, almost essential for understanding our world today.
That's right. And the core question Shirer grapples with, the one we're really digging into, is profound. How could Germany, you know, a nation known for its incredible culture, its philosophy, its music, how could it descend so rapidly into, well, utter barbarism?
Exactly. That's the key, isn't it? Why this deep dive feels so urgent even now. Shirer didn't just recount events. He basically gave us a blueprint, a cautionary one.
A roadmap, almost.
Yeah, a step-by-step look at how democratic institutions can crumble, and the chilling mechanics of how a totalitarian state gets built, gains power, and then eventually how it destroys itself.
It's like reading the autopsy report on a regime, really. Stark and necessary.
So let's talk about the author, William Shirer, born 1904. He brought this intense journalistic perspective to history writing, which makes the book so compelling.
He really did.
He wasn't just an academic studying it years later. He was actually there inside Germany as things were unfolding.
That's what's so striking about him. His viewpoint is just unique. He had this dual role. First, he was an eyewitness. He lived in Berlin, worked there from 1934 to 1940.
Right in the thick of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As a foreign correspondent for CBS Radio. So imagine he's seeing the Nuremberg rallies firsthand, these massive displays of power. He's reporting on the Anschluss, the annexation of Austria. He's sending the sounds of the early war back to the U.S.
Hearing the speeches, the propaganda directly from the source in real time.
In real time. But then, and this is crucial, his role shifts after the war. Mm-hmm. He gets access to this just unbelievable treasure trove of captured Nazi documents. We're talking over 485 tons of paper.
Wow. 485 tons is hard to even picture.
It's staggering. Personal diaries of people like Goebbels, transcripts of Hitler's private meetings, military plans, bureaucratic memos, everything.
So he combines his own eyewitness experience with this enormous documentary record.
Precisely. Plus testimony from the Nuremberg trials. It's that combination, the journalist's eye, the historian's meticulous research, that really makes The Rise and Fall such a foundational text.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put all that together, Shirer's central argument comes through loud and clear.
Yeah.
The Third Reich wasn't some, you know, inexplicable historical accident.
Right, not just bad luck or one evil man.
Yeah, no. It was, disturbingly, a predictable result of specific things coming together. Political instability, economic hardship, the deep resentment over the Treaty of Versailles, mixed with these older currents in German history, a tendency towards authoritarianism, militarism that kind of paved the way for extremism to take root and just flourish.
So the book functions as this really detailed anatomy lesson laid out chronologically. Shirer wants to show us not just what happened, which is horrifying enough, but how it could happen and why. It's like watching the systematic dismantling of a society between 1918 and 1945.
And he examines all these interconnected parts, doesn't he?
Yeah.
The psychology of Hitler and his inner circle, the actual step-by-step process of taking over democratic structures, that chilling word, Gleichschaltung, coordination.
Right, bringing everything into line.
Exactly. Then there's the mastery of propaganda, the military campaigns, and critically, the cold, systematic planning and execution of the Holocaust. It's the entire life cycle.
Okay, let's walk through that timeline, because the speed of the takeover is frankly terrifying when you see it laid out. Shirer starts logically with the chaos after World War I. The Weimar Republic is unstable. There's hyperinflation, that national sense of humiliation.
Yeah, the groundwork was there. And Shirer points out something really crucial. Hitler learned a lesson from his early failure, the Beer Hall Putsch in 1923.
The failed coup attempt.
Right. He realized violent revolution wasn't the way. Power had to be taken legally from within the democratic system itself. He saw he could use the rules against the rule makers.
Which is a chilling thought. And the trigger, the thing that pushed Germany over the edge into desperation, was the Great Depression hitting around 1929.
Absolutely. That economic desperation created the opening. People were looking for radical answers. And it allowed conservative politicians, who fatally underestimated Hitler, to basically hand him the chancellorship in January 1933. They thought they could control him.
A catastrophic miscalculation.
Totally. And from that moment, the dismantling just accelerates incredibly fast. Shirer lays out the sequence. The Reichstag fire happens. almost immediately blamed on communists.
The perfect excuse.
Exactly. It becomes the pretext to suspend basic civil liberties. Classic authoritarian playbook. Create or exploit a crisis, declare an emergency, grab power. Then very quickly came the Enabling Act.
We should pause on that one. The Enabling Act is pivotal.
It really is the point of no return.
Because this wasn't a coup in the traditional sense. The German parliament, the Reichstag, actually voted to give Hitler's government the power to make laws without parliamentary approval. They basically voted democracy out of existence.
Legally. That's the shocking part. They used the democratic process to destroy itself. And once those external checks were gone, Hitler moved to consolidate power internally. The Night of the Long Knives in 1934.
Where he wiped out his rivals within the Nazi party, like Ernst Röhm and the SA leadership.
Brutally. So within about 18 months of becoming chancellor, the Weimar Republic was completely dead. Finished.
And with internal control cemented, the focus immediately turns outward, right, towards expansion and aggression. Scheurer details how those early moves, putting troops back into the Rhineland, the Anschluss with Austria, worked mainly because nobody stopped him.
International inaction was key. Appeasement, which leads straight to the infamous Munich Agreement in 1938 over Czechoslovakia. Every time Hitler took a gamble and wasn't challenged, it just emboldened him further.
And validated his methods back home.
Absolutely. Then came the war. The initial Blitzkrieg campaigns were devastatingly successful. Poland, then France, falling so quickly, it seems like he was unstoppable. But Scheurer identifies the turning point, the moment of fatal arrogance, Operation Barbarossa.
The invasion of the Soviet Union in June 1941.
Yes, a decision driven, Scheurer argues, almost entirely by ideology, this hatred of communism and the desire for Lebensraum, living space rather than sound military strategy. It opened up that vast, brutal Eastern Front.
The front that would ultimately bleed the German army dry, and Scheurer really pinpoints the Battle of Stalingrad.
Definitely. Stalingrad, 1942 and 43. He describes it as this immense psychological and military catastrophe, the scale of the loss, the surrender of the Sixth Army. The Wehrmacht never really regained the strategic initiative after that, and Hitler's refusal to allow tactical retreats just made things worse.
So as the war starts going badly, does internal opposition finally start to build?
It does, yes. Though Scheurer is careful to show it was always a minority. But it grew, especially within parts of the military establishment who saw Hitler leading Germany to ruin. This culminates in the July 20th plot in 1944.
The attempt to assassinate Hitler with a bomb?
Exactly. It failed, of course. And Scheurer documents the absolutely savage purge that followed. Thousands were executed or imprisoned. Ironically, this eliminated many of the last remaining competent military and administrative figures, leaving Hitler even more isolated, surrounded by sycophants, making increasingly erratic decisions.
So the final parts of the book, they depict this descent into chaos, the fall.
It's pure Götterdämmerung, twilight of the gods. The Allies are closing in from both east and west. The regime is collapsing. And Scheurer uses those incredible documents from the final days in the Berlin bunker. Transcripts of Hitler raging, moving non-existent armies on maps, ordering scorched earth policies.
A complete detachment from reality.
Utterly. Right up until his suicide on April 30th, 1945. And just like that, the thousand-year Reich, which lasted only 12 years, vanished.
Wow. Okay, so walking through that whole arc, what are the big enduring themes or messages Scheurer leaves us with? What should we really take away?
Well, first, I think, is the stark lesson about the fragility of democratic institutions.
Hmm.
The Weimar Republic wasn't inherently doomed, but Scheurer shows how economic pain, political division, and public complacency or desperation can erode democratic norms incredibly quickly.
Yeah.
It's a warning that democracy needs constant tending.
Vigilance.
And connected to that is the second major theme,
mm.
the terrifying power of propaganda and the big lie. Goebbels was a genius, in a horrifying way, at mass manipulation. They understood how to exploit existing fears and prejudices, how to repeat falsehoods until they felt true, how to create an us versus them mentality,
mm-hmm.
and recognizing those techniques, understanding how media can be weaponized is just so crucial for us today, navigating our own information landscape. Couldn't agree more. Which leads to a third, deeply disturbing theme, the banality and bureaucratization of evil. Scheurer makes it clear the Holocaust wasn't just random violence. It was organized, methodically, by seemingly ordinary officials filling out forms, arranging train schedules, calculating quotas.
Like at the Wannsee Conference.
Exactly. The discussion wasn't if, but how. It shows how normal people can become complicit in monstrous acts through conformity, careerism, or just bureaucratic indifference. That systems can enable evil on a mass scale.
That's a chilling realization. And finally...
Finally, Shirer shows the inherent self-destructive nature of totalitarianism. For all its initial terrifying efficiency, the system was ultimately brittle. Why? Because it valued loyalty to the leader and ideological purity above competence, above truth, above reality itself.
So when Hitler started purging capable generals or insisting on strategically disastrous orders...
He was sowing the seeds of his own destruction. The system couldn't self-correct. It was designed to amplify the leader's flaws, guaranteeing eventual collapse.
Shirer's book is also filled with these really striking lines, either his own analysis or quotes directly from Nazi sources that just stop you in your tracks.
Absolutely. They encapsulate so much. One key idea that really gets at the philosophical underpinning of the regime's cruelty is this. The concept of equality of all human beings before the law was considered a poisonous liberal idea.
So they had to actively dismantle the very idea of universal justice first.
Precisely. To justify treating entire groups as less than human, you have to destroy the principle that protects everyone. It wasn't just hatred. It was a calculated legal and philosophical attack.
And then there's that famous line, often paraphrased from Hitler's Mein Kampf, about propaganda.
Yes. The great masses of the people will more easily fall victims to a big lie than to a small one. It's a terrifyingly astute insight into mass psychology. The sheer audacity of a lie can make it seem believable, if you repeat it enough.
It feels like the playbook for so much modern disinformation.
It really does. And then there's Shirer's own powerful reflection on the lasting impact. 1,000 years will pass, and the guilt of Germany will not be erased. It speaks to the immense moral weight of these events and the necessity of remembering, not just for Germans, but for all of humanity.
Okay, so bringing this home for listeners today, how can we apply these, frankly, quite heavy lessons from Shirer in our own lives, in our own time?
Well, one really practical application is using Shirer's analysis to help us recognize early warning signs of democratic backsliding.
What should we look for?
Watch for patterns. Leaders who consistently scapegoat minorities or immigrants. Leaders who relentlessly attack the free press, that term the Nazis used, Lügen Press, the lying press, echoes today. Leaders who try to undermine independent courts, universities, civil servants. These aren't isolated incidents. They can be part of a pattern Shirer identified.
So it's about pattern recognition. What else?
Developing media literacy is absolutely crucial. Goebbels' propaganda playbook is, in many ways, still being used, maybe with different technology. But the core techniques are similar. Flooding the zone with misinformation, appealing directly to emotion over reason, creating echo chambers, using simple, repetitive slogans.
We need to be critical consumers of information. Question sources, look for evidence, resist those knee-jerk emotional reactions.
Exactly. And maybe the most fundamental application is embracing civic responsibility. Shirer's ultimate message, I think, is that democracy isn't a spectator sport. It's not guaranteed. It requires active participation, staying informed, speaking out against injustice, even when it's unpopular or feels risky. That willingness to stand up is what keeps the thin veneer of civilization intact.
That's powerful. Thinking back on the book, what stands out most to you personally? What was maybe surprising, even knowing the history?
For me, it's always the chilling efficiency combined with the sheer bureaucratic normality of how so much of it was implemented. It wasn't just madmen ranting. It was memos, meetings, directives. Shirer's genius is weaving together that cold, documented reality with the human tragedy he witnessed.
Yeah.
It makes it feel incredibly present, not just like distant history.
Yeah, I agree. My final thought, picking up on that idea of the thin veneer, is perhaps Shirer's most enduring, maybe provocative, lesson. The conditions that allowed Nazism to rise, deep economic anxiety, social polarization, the appeal of easy answers from a strong leader, the demonization of the other, these aren't exclusively German phenomena from the 1930s.
No, sadly not.
They are human vulnerabilities. They can appear anywhere, anytime. And that's why understanding Shirer, understanding this history, isn't just about the past. It's absolutely essential knowledge for protecting democratic values now and for the future.
Well said. It's a timeless warning.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.